Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Mike, round one of the WWE draft is done. What's your biggest story from what we learned with the first, I think, 16 picks, a few more than 16 wrestlers because of some tag teams that were drafted?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very newsworthy night, a lot of surprises, I think. You know, I think the biggest might have been Hit Row getting drafted, but I think the biggest storyline probably is the fact that the Raw Women's Champion, Charlotte, got drafted over to SmackDown. I certainly wasn't expecting that, and now it kind of creates an interesting scenario to see what happens with the Raw Women's Championship now that she's on SmackDown, what happens with the SmackDown Women's Championship at Crown Jewel in that match, and I think we'll kind of know a little bit more on Monday on Raw when we see if either Becky Lynch or Sasha Banks get drafted over to Raw, and then I guess we'll see. But last year, you know, they switched the tag team champions instead of doing a match or anything like that or having them vacate.
Yeah.
They just traded.
New Day joked. Do we add that to our title reign or not? Our
right.
Tally.
So now you have the question, if Becky gets moved over or Sasha or whoever wins the championship, then is there another trade? I don't really know, but hopefully not.
My expectation is that Becky gets drafted to Raw, and she feuds with Bianca Belair, who got drafted by Raw to go to Raw. And so that way Charlotte ends up on SmackDown, and Becky ends up on Raw, and they trade belts. I think
it's 90, a possibility for sure.
I think it's like 99%. I mean, I don't think they're going to keep both belts on SmackDown. And I think Becky going to Raw is a way to placate, USA Network and send Becky over to work with, Bianca Belair, and continue that. I'm just trying
it's
to think of the lay of the land.
It's a difficult situation because on SmackDown, your top two women are both heels too. So it's just that they have to find the proper balance. I guess, again, we'll know more on Monday when we kind of see where everybody else lands. But initially, just Charlotte moving over was a surprise to me.
Yeah. I'm looking at the lay of the land and I'm thinking, okay, Charlotte's on SmackDown. Then, now, I do want to remind people, 10 years ago, John Cena was drafted from one brand and then back to the other brand.
That's true.
Everything
I don't believe whatever rules those were are in place this time, but I guess we don't know because they don't really tell us what the rules are. So
they do not tell us, which is kind of annoying. But I'm wondering if Rhea Ripley, where did Ripley end up? She ended up, she's on Raw too. So yeah,
although
so you can't have her.
She's a tag team champion, so she can go anywhere, which is why I don't understand why Raw would waste such an early draft pick on them because they can just go to SmackDown too.
Yeah, but I guess when they lose the belts, then at least
that's
it's
true.
Cheaper.
Yeah.
Although I mean, looking at the lay of the land, it is, I'm not quite sure who Charlotte's opponents on SmackDown will be.
I guess Naomi's a possibility at some point or, you know, build up somebody like a Toni Storm potentially, which we haven't seen yet, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this is like, we're kind of in this weird zone where there's certain things we know, like Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns are on the same brand. That's newsworthy. New Day's Kofi and Xavier are separate from Big E. That's a story. As you said, Top Dollar drafted from NXT. I saw some spoiler out there about that. So thank you for whoever spoiled that. Now stop doing
that.
Yeah,
I've seen that he wrestled a dark match, I guess, tonight before
the show. I mean, not to go on a mini rant, but I just don't understand why, you know, you want to be like, hey, look, I know something, and I'm going to ruin a surprise for everybody.
I agree.
There's just no news out on that in this era.
Yeah, that's one of my least favorite things about wrestling now.
Yeah, like it's one thing if a show is taped in front of fans and you report an event. That's news.
Right.
And if you do hear something, it's news, but there's no way social media to really control it. But I'm just against, and, you know, shame on WWE for letting that get out too. You know, I mean, just let us have, I don't want to know what's going to happen on Succession season 3. That doesn't make me feel special.
100%. And now every debut that we get now is for the most part on WWE or AEW, usually we know about it going in, so.
I know, yeah. So, I don't know. Stop supporting people who do that. Or yell at them, I don't know. All right, yeah, so we'll work through the draft. Yeah, I mean, Austin Theory getting drafted from NXT to Raw is noteworthy. He's shown wide range on NXT as a personality. I'm curious what Vince McMahon will think of him. He's not super tall. You know, he's not John Cena height, but he's got some other attributes Vince McMahon likes. You know, good-looking guy, good body, athletic. He's young. I'm curious what kind of path he ends up on Raw. If they just, you know, kind of early on define him as a mid-card guy and it's going to take a long time for him to get to the top, or if he's someone they kind of decide they want to push pretty quickly. And again, like I said, we're sort of in this in-between zone. We don't know where everyone's going to land, so we can only speculate so far before we start speculating on things that will be unraveled on Monday when someone who we, you know, are talking about ends up on a different brand than what we're presuming. So, you know, we'll work through it. Monday night's post-draft show will certainly give us more to talk about, and then there'll probably be a supplemental draft on Tuesday. And so then we'll
supposedly
really
everybody's just a free agent if they don't get drafted, from what they said.
Yeah, yeah. So Brock Lesnar declares himself a free agent. I like that. I like that in the sense of let's address it, because if he's not drafted on Monday, then why not? And if he gets drafted first overall, how does that affect, say, the politics of how Bobby Lashley feels, or who, or Becky, because obviously Becky wasn't eligible tonight. You know, the politics of who gets picked before whom is always a little interesting here, because feelings can be hurt. It does sort of reveal how management wants to project to fans that the executives and officials feel about the wrestlers. So it's a bit of a, not that there aren't many other tells, like who wins and who gets top pay-per-view matches and who's featured in main events on TV, but this is one of those tells where you can kind of see where how management feels about different wrestlers.
Yeah, and on the subject of Brock, I like the way that they worked it into the storyline with Roman Reigns also, with Paul Heyman, and, you know, because really most of the stuff that happened in the draft really wasn't related to any type of storyline, but they worked this in, and they make you think, is Paul Heyman really pulling strings for Brock Lesnar behind the scenes, or is Brock just bringing this up to kind of get into Roman's head leading up to their match, and that's kind of left for the viewers to decide, and I think that, you know, that ambiguity is a good thing going in their match.
Because right now it seems like Lesnar's just effing with Heyman
right
out of the sport of it. But they have, you know, there really wasn't a full backstory ever revealed on why Heyman aligned with Reigns and not Lesnar. And we don't know the story on how Lesnar feels about that. And it's just, they've just been coy. You know, Heyman's like, you're my tribal chief. Reigns is like, I thought you were. I thought you were the wise man, but I don't know. And then you have Lesnar, who's just being coy about it, but in a way where you can interpret it both ways. You're right. It's absolutely open to interpretation or speculation, is a better way to put it. Is Lesnar acting coy and messing with Heyman because Heyman's putting on a show for Reigns and they're in on it together? Or has Lesnar really had enough of Heyman? He's a full-fledged babyface. Heyman is clearly a heel. That will come out in the end, that Heyman really has been aligned and loyal to Reigns. And that's where I think it's heading. I mean, I think Lesnar's a babyface. Heyman stays heel. He stays with Reigns. And it comes out that, you know, Reigns sticks with Heyman for the foreseeable future. There's a day where Reigns turns babyface and breaks up with Heyman. I think it's way too soon to do that. I think we have some big babyface matchups to go first, including I expect Bobby Lashley to be drafted to SmackDown next week and have Hurt Business feud with a Bloodline. But that gets away that gets in the way a little bit of Drew declaring he wants a Universal title, which, by the way, Mike, I liked. I liked Drew right away establishing I'm a top guy with top things on my mind.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he's kind of been, you know, kind of shuffled into the background for, you know, the past several weeks on Raw ever since he kind of exited the WWE Championship scene. And it's been, you know, he was stuck in the thing with Jinder Mahal, and it just wasn't doing him any favors. I think of anybody going into the draft, he was the one who's probably going to benefit most from making a move. That happened, and I think it makes all the sense in the world, because when they faced each other at Survivor Series in a champion versus champion match, it was an excellent match. It felt big time. It felt like this is something you can go back to at a WrestleMania down the line. And if they're, you know, serious about continuing to establish Drew as one of your faces of the company, then I could see him being the person that you groom and get ready to face Roman Reigns for the title, potentially in the main event of this upcoming WrestleMania, and maybe he's the one that dethrones Roman Reigns. So I think that bringing Lashley over and doing that now is a good thing, because then you can kind of save for later Roman Reigns against Drew McIntyre as a potential WrestleMania main event. And I can certainly see that being something that Vince McMahon would want to put together.
All right, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then we'll get to phone calls and on-site correspondence. And it'll be interesting to hear how fans reacted in the building to different draft picks, and see if there are any surprises in terms of crowd reactions tonight. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, October 1st, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. And I'm joined by Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio and Bleacher Report. Mike, it's been too long. I didn't look at Skype to see the last time we connected on the show here, but it's been a while, and it's great to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back. Always a great time, and especially a show like this where so much stuff happened, and excited to talk with you about it for sure.
Absolutely. So we'll get into some plugs later. I want to get right to one of our on-site correspondents who's already standing by and find out what it was like in the building. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I am here. I'm sorry.
Kevin
I'm
on an airplane.
Now, yeah.
He is.
I'm actually
he's on an airplane engine.
Sorry.
Sure, no problem, of course. Well,
sorry,
it's like the
that.
Sounds
sorry.
Of the city. No problem.
Okay.
Yep.
Sorry, I was walking to my car. Yep. So, I enjoyed the show. I had really great seats.
Yeah.
I was actually on like the second row on the hard cam side, so like right there where Becky and Pat McAfee were on that side. Yeah, so it was a really great show. I thought that the crowd was really into a lot of the acts. You had the Bloodline, obviously. You had New Day and Street Profits, EST, Bianca Belair. They were really into her. Sasha Banks got a great reaction. Also, Becky Lynch. So the stars were definitely there. Brock Lesnar, obviously, it was a big surprise to see him. It was huge. Got a ton of reactions from everyone. I think the crowd was hot from, like, start to finish. They knew what we expected, a great show. I think they really did provide that. They even had a dark match. It wasn't what was advertised, but it was a variation of it.
Talk about the dark match. Talk about what happened and how many people stuck around for it and how long it went and what the finish was, all that good stuff.
Sure. So the dark match was Drew McIntyre and the Street Profits versus the Bloodline, Roman Reigns and the Usos. And pretty much everybody stuck around. So pretty much a full house. So you didn't see really anybody leave. They were really hyped up to see Roman, like literally after we had saw him early in the night. Same thing with the Street Profits. They got a great reaction. And Drew McIntyre got a really good reaction. But it was still a full house. It was really, the crowd was really a packed house. You had a couple of empty seats on that side where the hard cam is, but literally the lower bowl on the opposite of the hard cam, I'm sorry, but the lower bowl on the hard cam side was full, pretty much. Everybody was there, even on the higher level, it was actually still full house.
Was there anything that surprised you in terms of crowd reactions tonight? Something that went against the storyline or the presentation on TV, or someone who didn't get a reaction that you thought would, or someone who got a way bigger reaction than you anticipated? Anything like that?
Well, I would say that the one thing that got a kind of great reaction, a decent reaction from the crowd, was the Seth Rollins home invasion, I guess to call it, with Edge.
Yeah.
We watched it from the crowd. Edge was there in the arena live, but you could see he was really fired up when he got the phone call. Sorry, still walking, trying to get to my car. But
problem.
He was really fired up. Yeah. So a ton of fire from him. He ran backstage. But the crowd was really all over Rollins because he was like a scumbag. Like, he's eating people's groceries and throwing stuff around. So people really didn't like that.
Mike, jump on in with a question for Kevin.
Yeah, kind of interested to see what the reactions were like for the main event, because obviously Becky and Sasha are heels and Bianca's the babyface, but there's been a lot of debate about, you know, whether it was the right move to turn Becky heel and all that kind of stuff. So in terms of fan reaction, how was it in terms of positive and negative for the three women that were involved in that main event angle?
Yeah, good question. Becky Lynch got a good reaction when her music hit. I would say it was kind of mixed once she kind of got towards the broadcast table area, when she kind of, like, the music kind of settled in and people realized that she was there. It kind of settled down after that, but it was a really big reaction for her when she came out. Bianca Belair, throughout the night, from the moment she came out all the way to the end, literally, had people chanting EST. Crowd was really into her, like, a ton. Sasha got a good reaction. It wasn't to the level of those two, but definitely for her first match back, it was a good reaction. And the crowd was definitely into the match the whole way through.
Mike, anything else you want to ask Kevin?
Yeah, just based on the draft picks, obviously it's kind of a unique situation, I would assume, to be in there when, you know, it's stuff that's not actually happening in the ring. It's just announcing names going to Raw or going to SmackDown. What were the reactions like for that? Like, in your opinion, what was the biggest reaction for a draft pick, whether it was surprise or whether it was just excitement? What really got the crowd buzzing as far as the draft picks are concerned?
Yeah, good question. Again, Big E, I think, was the one that I think surprised the most people, but it got a huge reaction. I was actually surprised by that because, I mean, I like the New Day and I like Big E, but I was actually shocked if he can go as high as he did. And then also, like, fans love him. They like, they really do. Like, I mean, sometimes you might take it for granted, but, like, he's getting great reactions every time he shows his face. New Day, where they were big disappointed when they were split up again. Like, I think they kind of got used to, hey, okay, Big E's over there with Kofi and Woods now, so New Day's going to be back together. And then here we go, 2 days or 3 days later or whatever it is, and they split back up. So fans were kind of disappointed in that too. So they didn't get a good reaction when that happened.
You talked about the wrestlers who got the biggest reactions. Just, I'm curious to compare, say, Belair to Brock Lesnar. You know, Belair's there every week. Lesnar's more of a special attraction, more of a legacy. Did it seem the crowd was just 100% behind Lesnar? Are they still not sure about him? Or is Belair just so red hot she actually competed or beat him in terms of crowd reaction?
I think, so if you kind of compare it two ways, I would say, because Brock wasn't out there as long as Bianca was, but like when he came out, it was definitely a shock amongst everybody. And then that roar of the crowd when you realize he's there to confront Roman Reigns. So it was definitely a nice pop or loud reaction from the fans. And throughout that whole interaction, people were going crazy until he kind of played to the crowd at the end. Bianca, when she came out, she got that reaction. And even during the match, it was continuing. Like, it just was nonstop throughout the whole, pretty much the match and towards the end. So I would say it might not have been initially as loud as, like, when Brock maybe came out, because there wasn't a surprise factor, but definitely consistently had the crowd engaged and, you know, had them chanting EST, her name, you know, plenty of reactions. So they definitely were investing in her.
Was there anything before SmackDown began in terms of warm-up matches or dark tapings or anything like that?
So I got there literally like maybe 10 minutes before the show started, but I did hear Keith Lee's music going, and it looked like he was squashing a guy when I came in. So I didn't see the match, but I heard his music going off when I was actually coming in and sitting down. So yeah, I'm pretty sure he positive he competed, but that was pretty much all I caught when I got in.
Kevin, is there anything else you want to relay to us about your experience at the show tonight?
No, I would love to say that that it was a great experience, great seats, like hard-hitting action, definitely worth the price that I paid for it. Just a good atmosphere. You got to see all of really as many of the top stars as you can see in this day and age. I mean, you had Lesnar, Roman, Edge. I mean, they were all there. So, and then the women really held their own in comparison to the men. So I enjoyed it. It was a great show.
Cool. Well, Kevin, thanks for calling and letting us know about your experience tonight.
All right. Thanks for taking it.
Yeah, you bet. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to jump right to another on-site correspondent who's at the building tonight, and that is Christopher. Christopher, thank you also for calling in. You've had a chance maybe to listen to what Kevin had to tell us. I'm interested to get your take on if anything jumped out that he left out or that you saw differently. But first, welcome.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, we just kind of jumped off the beaten path of Baltimore City, which is not always safe, but Molly and I, like,
I've been there, and I know what you mean. Yeah.
we walked out during the dark match main event, so we didn't get to see what was finished there, but we were there most of the show.
Yeah, so I asked our previous on-site correspondent a few minutes ago to describe who got the biggest pops of the night. And, you know, like Edge, Lesnar, Belair kind of jump out to me as some who were in front of the fans and would have gotten the biggest pops. Who else do you group in there, and how do you rank them?
From what I heard, Edge got the biggest pop, definitely. He definitely got the biggest pop. I would maybe say, and I was walking, I was inside, but I was not in my seat, like in the inside, when Brock Lesnar came out. So I did not get to hear his pop. So, you know, put an asterisk on there, but, the biggest pop I heard was Edge, and followed by him, I would say Becky Lynch.
And was there a point in the show that fans lost interest at all? I mean, it felt – it's hard to tell on TV because we have commercial breaks and you can kind of lose track of dead space. But were there times in the show either where it just felt like forever between one thing happening and another in the ring where maybe the crowd got restless? Or did it feel like the show moved along well and WWE had a good handle on that?
Not really. I mean, I watched – WWE, AEW, everything, every day, every week, and it really never actually. And I've been to a lot of 3-hour Raws. Sorry, it's getting loud. I've been to a lot of 3-hour Raws, and it does get it does drag on you. You get tired, but it seemed like this went by really fast, actually, which is a good thing, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed like the eight-man tag match, the crowd had a chance to have a different kind of energy expressed than the rest of the show. The rest of the show felt like it was sort of angle-based, star-based, and that was just – it was more kind of like what AEW tries to sell itself on. You just mentioned, you know, being someone who watches AEW too, where you've got a lot of just athleticism going on. You know, Chad Gable doing some pretty cool stuff, and Montez Ford with the dives, and, you know, Roode and Ziggler are always solid, and then Otis adds a different twist. Did that seem to kind of wake the crowd up in a way that maybe a show relatively light on wrestling otherwise? I mean, Kevin Owens and Corbin wasn't exactly high-flying and super athletic. Carmella, Liv Morgan didn't really take place, and, you know, other than the main event, that was the only other match that was on SmackDown.
Yeah, I did feel like that eight-man tag, the crowd was pretty pumped, and they were really, really into New Day and to the Street Profits. They're really, really into them. The crowd, my fiance and I, we were in the 200 section, and I mean, I would say almost everybody around us was probably African American, and they were, I mean, everybody was, everyone was really, 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 really pumped with Street Profits and the New Day. I mean, definitely.
Who got the most heel heat, the most boos? Who did the fans clearly have the most disdain for? Was it, you know, Charlotte, or was it Happy Corbin and the obnoxious laughter gimmick?
Actually, it's funny. It's funny you say Corbin because, I listen every week, and I swear, I mean, Corbin was getting some boos, but I swear they did. I feel like throw in some extra audio. I wasn't booing, but the crowd was booing. It got a little extra loud all of a sudden. Like, they threw in some extra boos for Corbin. It was very bizarre. I will say that.
Was there any time where it did feel like you could, that it seemed like there was a very audible reaction that did not match you sitting there watching the fans? Everybody is sort of, you know, because WWE worked on that a lot during the Thunderdome era, and the wrestlers appreciated it. I've talked to WWE wrestlers who were like, it's so nice, even if it's manufactured with some twists of buttons backstage, having that kind of natural reaction to what we're doing in the ring again. WWE sort of mastered that, and now there's, you know, a lot of suspicion that they're doing a lot more of that because they figured out how to do it well. Did it jump out to you at all?
The only time that it jumped out to me was with Corbin. That was the only time where it seemed like the noise got a little extra loud. It got louder than what it seemed like was around me. Just kind of jumped all of a sudden.
Yeah, Todd Martin talked about that on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship yesterday, our Blue Logo show, that he was suspicious of some of that happening this past week on WWE TV. Mike, jump in with any question that you have for Christopher here. And then, Christopher, after that, I want to hear what your fiancée thought, since she's a newer wrestling fan. But go ahead first, Mike.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to know, because we're still somewhat early, obviously, in fans returning to the arenas. And as you said, you've been to a lot of shows before. You know, just based on, you know, this show compared to previous shows you were at prior to the pandemic, what did you feel the crowd energy was like? Because I know sometimes pre-pandemic, especially for like a 3-hour Raw, as you mentioned, tough to keep that energy up. Did you feel like post-pandemic, first show back, that the fans were more into it than usual, the same, less? Like, what was your vibe that you got?
Definitely the crowd was more into it. I'll admit, I was more into it. I mean, I've been to WrestleManias, and I was more pumped for a little old SmackDown than I would normally be. And the crowd was, I think the crowd was more jacked than normal. People are just, they're pumped to be in front of to be on a live show. It is. It's cool to be back in front of live wrestling.
I didn't pay attention, other than I noticed here and there, just in terms of mask wearing. Did you feel just totally comfortable? Was it a minority who were masked? What were there any announcements or precautions? I'm not quite sure what Maryland's current rules are on that. But kind of describe just the COVID aspect of things.
Maryland's kind of, I would say, in medium level. The state hasn't, I would say, medium level, but the city of Baltimore, they've got a little stricter rules than the state. You do have to wear a mask indoor in the city of Baltimore. So you did have to wear a mask to go in. Inside, some masks are up, some are down. Nobody's getting crazy about it, but it's a little bit of whatever.
So what did Molly think of this show? I don't know if you want to put her on or you just kind of give us feedback on what she had to say. Either way works. But you had mentioned in your email when you said you were going to the show that you got her into wrestling, but she had never been to a show before. Is that correct? Do I remember right?
Yeah, she's here. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey, Molly.
She's a little
nervous. Molly, what'd you think? That's all right.
She usually hears me as I'm, ironing clothes, getting dressed, stuff like that. So listening to your show, I mean.
Oh, sure. Yep. I know. Yeah, that's podcasts on my phone is how I get through laundry, too. So absolutely. Well, either of you. Yeah.
So Molly,
just
you
talk
say?
About what Molly's reaction was to me.
I thought it was exciting.
Did anything surprise you? Like, did anything come across different than you anticipated? Or, Chris, did she mention anything, unexpected? I know some people think there's play-by-play when they go to the show, and they're shocked there isn't.
The only thing I thought was weird was everybody exiting after their fight and just, like, walking off. I thought there would be more excitement when they won at the commercial.
Yeah. Like, Yeah, like once they go to commercial, it sort of feels like you got the sense of, oh, the show is over, and now, you know, everyone's just sort of slinking to the back, and it's not really a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed almost very theater-esque, where it's like, you know, the match ends, lights go dark, and, you know, exit stage right or something. Like, they all just suddenly, doesn't matter how brutal or physical the match was, it was the lights go dark, and they just everybody stopped fighting. Molly was like, that's odd.
Yeah.
I imagine it could be weird, especially for a newer fan or, you know, somebody that hasn't been to a WWE show before, when they come out for their entrance and then they go to commercial, and then during that commercial they just stop the music and the person is just standing there in the ring, and then they replay the music again when they come back from commercial. Because I remember thinking that was odd early on when I was first aesthetic shows.
Yes, exactly. And I told her, my first show was, oh my God, 1998, a house show, which is that house show lineup was better than any show, better than a WrestleMania now. But anyhow, back in the day, like, I remember going to Raw or SmackDown in the late 90s, early 2000s, and the wrestler, and they would, you know, the heels would talk crap to you during when there was a commercial to get you all riled up, and then when the lights came back and the camera went rolling, you know, you'd be even more pissed off as a fan. But it's now they just, when it goes to commercial, they just act like you're not there anymore. It's weird.
Yes. Molly, what did you think of just seeing wrestling in person in terms of the noise the ring made? And did it feel different not having a bunch of camera angles chosen for you? You just watched from one perspective. Did anything jump out about that? I mean, I remember thinking when I was young going to shows for the first time how cool that was, that I was hearing it happen and seeing it happen in front of my own eyes without a director choosing camera angles and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it felt like more of the crowd chose what I saw more than the cameras.
Yeah. And did the matches sound different? Did they look more real or fake? Were you amazed at anything athletically, or did it just seem like, hey, I'm here, but it's just the same as I see on TV?
Yeah, it definitely seemed more real when you're not seeing it as close.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Do you want to go back? Like next time they're in town?
Yeah. I'll go back again.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad you want to go back. Because I'm always going to go back.
I was going to say, did you know that, Christopher? Were you on the edge of your seat when I asked that?
Although I will say, she on our way down here, I said, you know, AEW is going to be in Philly next week, and she said, oh, I would have rather gone there.
Oh wow, interesting. And why? Just she likes the show better, or there's certain wrestlers she likes better?
Why do you like AEW a little more?
I think the show's better.
And wrestlers you like there better, or what about the show do you like better?
I just think the storylines are better.
Well, and what about them are better? I don't mean to like interrogate here. I'm kind of like, imagine Vince McMahon's listening and he's like, oh wow, why does Molly like them better than us? Like, I'm kind of curious, like, what, maybe he'll change for the better if he hears this.
I just feel like the storylines are more real, not so blatantly written.
Yeah. Yep. That might have been my guess too, for an answer from anyone if they chose one over the other. Both have their attributes, but yeah.
Molly's will constantly say this watching WWE. She'll be like, "Wait, what happened? I'm sorry, I'm confused. Did I miss something? Who? When did that character change? Or when did that? What happened to that storyline? That got dropped, or I thought that character was doing this." And I'll be like, "No, you didn't miss a single thing. It just happened."
I think we all say that sometimes, even having watched it for decades. So understandable.
Yes.
Christopher, is there anything else you want to add? We got a long list of callers who want to chime in on the show tonight, so we'll let you go and move on. But any kind of final observations or any fun anecdote to share with us from attending?
I'll say that I've been to a lot of shows and the crowd seemed a little more extra pumped up than they normally would be. And I'm in the same boat. I mean, I normally wouldn't be this excited to see a old down, but, people are excited to see wrestling again. So am I. So I think this will carry on for a while until things get totally normal and maybe people will be less excited, but for now, people are pumped up.
Well, if you go to Philly, let us know. It'd be great to have you guys back on if you both go.
I think I blew my opportunity to Philly by coming here.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, Christopher and Molly, thanks so much. It was great talking with you.
All right, thank you, Wade. I enjoy listening to you. You get me through a lot of crazy days. Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. Thanks so much. And,
right,
and through laundry, too, apparently. I muted you. Go ahead and finish what you're saying. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christopher.
Oh, I just said, for Molly, you're just this guy she hears in the background of my life.
Yes, yep. Cool. All right, take care. Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Mike, when he said, the show gets him through some crazy times, and he had mentioned laundry earlier, I thought maybe laundry was crazy for him.
It can be. It depends how long you let it go for, I guess, right?
Yeah, or how many shirts are inside out. And then you leave the Kleenex in the pocket, and then it's just chaos, the dryer.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Can be.
All right. Yes. All right, we got lots of people on hold. I hope everybody sticks around who has called in. We'd love to get to as many of you as possible. We're going to begin with area code 423. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
My name's Joel from Chattanooga.
Joel from where? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the town.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Cool. So thanks for calling, Joel. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
I thought it was a lot of uncertainty as far as the draft goes. Last draft that they had, there was the subject of Raw being a 3-hour show would get a bigger percentage of draft picks than SmackDown, and they didn't really address that. I was just wondering if maybe you guys had any idea how they're planning on addressing that situation.
Yeah, that jumped out to me right away. I was sort of expecting when Pierce and DeVille were doing the draft picks that if nothing else, when SmackDown went first, that then Raw would get two picks and then maybe go every other after that. In pickleball, when you play doubles, one team serves and then the other team, both players get to serve. Like whoever serves first is that you're fair to the other side. And then they didn't even do that, much less have the 2-for-1 because Raw is 3 hours. They just didn't mention that. I didn't see any documentation by WWE explaining this. I know people were lamenting on Twitter in the hours leading up to SmackDown. How's this going to work? Mike, I guess Joel's specific question, the 2-for-1, your thoughts on that and how they'll handle it, and what have you heard in terms of, you kind of alluded to it earlier, maybe the supplemental or free agent type aspect of things after Raw next week?
Yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised that they went with a 1-for-1 instead of what they previously did, which would be to do a round where you had 2 picks for SmackDown and 3 picks for Raw, because it always felt to me like I understand that Raw has an extra hour, but it felt like you were saying that maybe SmackDown was a little bit less than because you were giving them fewer picks. So I never liked the imbalance there. I prefer that they let it be even. Really at this point, I don't think it matters that much because you can call people up from NXT. You can, once the draft is over, you can have more of the quote-unquote free agents sign with Raw than SmackDown if you feel the need to fill in the roster more and you feel the need to fill the 3 hours more. I think the draft itself should be even the way it was. And to one of your points, Wade, I would anticipate that Raw will get the first pick on Monday, and then it'll be essentially the opposite of what we got tonight.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be my thought on it. I think they maybe didn't want to confuse people that, because not everybody really knows, you know, what a draft is and what a serpentine draft order is or anything like that. So I could see maybe that being the case, and then Raw gets the first pick on Monday, and it really doesn't matter either way because you have equally as much star power picked tonight as you're going to have picked on Monday. So I actually like the balance of it compared to usual. I just wish they would have, like you kind of mentioned, explained to us exactly what was going to be happening going in, exactly who was available to be selected, exactly what the rules were going to be, because we kind of went into it blind for the most part and just kind of had to figure it out as we went, which, you know, that's not what a draft is. They have so many opportunities always to do these drafts better and to make them better, mm-hmm. make them feel more like the NFL draft, which is a huge event that everybody loves and waits for all year among football fans, but they don't do that with the WWE draft, and I just wish they would.
I have a feeling that if Vince McMahon is listening or any of his inner circle, they're like, serpentine draft? How do sports drafts work? Maybe we should have studied up on this. I think they have landed in one of the better places as far as draft formats go this year and last year. You know, it used to be like some sort of weird, random boop, 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 boop game show thing
terrible.
Where they're, you know,
horrible.
It was just like, what is going on? It's random. And it was like, and then they called it a draft lottery. Like they heard the NBA use the term and they thought it sounded cool. So they'd say it. They had no idea what that meant. That's just like the draft lottery determines the order. It's not the actual thing. And it was just kind of embarrassing, to be honest, how WWE handled this for so long. And now we're in a good spot. I mean, this is good enough. I mean, we can, you know, Joel brings up a good point. You know, it's a little different than last year. WWE doesn't bother to explain it to us, which, yeah, that aspect of things is annoying. But overall, you know, and you're right, Raw gets a first pick on Monday, SmackDown gets it tonight. And I was thinking, you know, two picks for Raw versus one for SmackDown, but you're right to clarify it was three picks for Raw, two for SmackDown, because mm-hmm. you get a pick for each hour you're on the air. I'm fine with that, too, if they do it, because it is a longer show. But I don't have a problem with them not doing it, because that just means Raw has more, I guess, you know, salary cap room to draft free agents or not draft, but sign free agents when that all gets revealed next week. Joel, back to you for any follow-up on that topic or anything else.
Yeah, just there's one thing that I'm glad didn't return was the video of their so-called drafting calls. Those were really cheesy, and I'm glad.
Oh God, that's right. That was 2 years ago, right, Mike? The draft room.
I thought that was when they had
random people who were supposed to be Fox executives. Yeah. That was terrible.
And Joel, what'd you say? You thought it was last year?
Yeah, well, I thought it was when the Fox deal started. I thought that was the
– Yeah, that was
– 2 years ago, I think that would have been, right?
2 years ago, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, pre-pandemic.
So off that topic, there's one more thing that I was kind of wondering why they kind of left the Seth Rollins and Edge kind of open-ended, like there was – no real conclusion to it. I felt like it was kind of weird that, you know, kind of like they said, why is he not calling the police instead of some random guys? It just kind of seems weird that the cameraman is following Seth Rollins into his house. So that was just kind of odd to me.
Back in the day, J.J. Dillon and the Four Horsemen attacked Dusty Rhodes on a street, and J.J.'s told me the story in person and on the phone. He just loves telling the story because it's so – he's like, we explained, you know, I paid a cameraman to document everything. We wanted to show off to the world what we're doing and wanted, you know, to document it. And it would be nice. You know, I mean, Vince McMahon thinks this stuff doesn't matter. Like, why did the Liv Morgan Carmella match not happen? Who cares? Says Vince McMahon. Nobody needs to know that. Nobody cares. But it all adds up. You know, it feels arbitrary. it feels just sort of disrespectfully dismissive of our attention to detail, copyright Paul Heyman, that they just are flippant about this stuff. And I would have loved for Seth to say, you know, hey, cameraman, I paid you good money. I want you to film me over here. Follow me. Don't – like, that's all he had to say. Just a little comment like that. And it doesn't seem to enter their minds, or if someone suggests it, someone gives them a dirty look, and then they realize, well, I shouldn't ever say stuff like that again. The culture just doesn't ask for that kind of detail to be included. I would have liked it. I think they should have gone back to the house. I think it would have been hilarious if Seth walked out of the house and towards his like, you know, SUV, and he's got like one of Edge's TV under his arm, one of Edge's, you know, big screen TVs that he's carrying out to the car. Or just some whatever. I mean, you can put some thought into it, come up with kind of, you know, although Seth could then yell at the camera guy, don't film this, you know, you idiot. Don't film this part. I don't want documented evidence I'm stealing from him. I think there was more room for comedy or just closure, as Joel brings up. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, that segment was like a roller coaster of emotions for me, because when it initially started, I was very happy because it's a unique thing. It's something that we don't see that often. I mean, it's obviously happened on occasion over the years where somebody, a wrestler, goes to another wrestler's house or whatever. And then Seth just plays this role so well. And I was thoroughly entertained by him throughout the segment. And then couldn't help but laugh, like when Edge is on the phone with Beth and saying, I'm going to call Daniel and David. And then Pat McAfee's like, Daniel and David, you should probably call the police. Like,
I wonder if McAfee was supposed to say that, by the way. Sometimes I think McAfee just says the obvious as opposed to, you know, what's on his mind. And he's like, well, fire me, Vince, if you don't want to. But I'm going to be just fine without this job. Like, he sort of has a renegade aspect to his commentary, because that's what I was thinking. And you were thinking it too, Mike.
Right. I get that impression of Pat McAfee also, and I think that he's – I mean, because he's so well-known outside of the wrestling space, like, he's such an asset to WWE, and he's great at his job with WWE also. So I think he can get away with that, whereas a lot of people wouldn't be able to get away with that, and that's part of what makes him so entertaining. But to your point, I think that they should have gone back to it. Like, it was shocking to me that they never went back to it. So we never learned what happened. Did Seth Rollins end up just staying the night? Did Daniel and David show up and run him off? Did he beat up Daniel and David? Like, where did Beth go? Did she stay at her brother's? Did she bring the groceries home that needed to go into the fridge? Like, we never learned any of these pressing questions. And I just don't get why you couldn't have given us a few more minutes of that, just the tiny loose ends together.
Yeah, maybe WWE.com exclusive later or something. Joel, any closing words from you?
I'm done. Thanks for taking my call. There was one thing I'll let you maybe talk about. I feel like kind of Jeff Hardy kind of got the shaft again tonight. You know, they go for an interview and then Lesnar shows up and just pretty much shoos him away. So I kind of feel bad for him, but I thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Joel. Call again. Good to hear from you.
All right.
Mike, I would have liked Jeff Hardy. Of course. Yeah, definitely. I would like Jeff Hardy to lean into to Kayla's microphone and be like, look at Brock and go, Kayla, I didn't really have a lot to say. Happy to be here, but I got to go somewhere else.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Give him a little, you know, give him a chance, like, just kind of have a funny line or something. Like, it just felt like a missed opportunity where, you know, it's like having Jeff just like cower in the presence of Lesnar, like, I'm scared and I'm intimidated. Like, he does deserve better than that. And I just think, you know, there's just an opportunity there for Jeff to lean in and be like, Kayla, I actually have to go make a phone call. Maybe we'll catch up later. You know, just let him have some plausible story he presents to save face a little bit instead of just acting like a scaredy cat.
Yeah. Based on the way that he's been handled for the most part, until recently, like, the stuff, the United States title stuff was all right, but it doesn't surprise me that that happened. I do think, though, it was interesting, like, because you could tell when Jeff showed up and then Brock shows up, there was a reaction for sure from the crowd. At least it came across that way on the TV. Like, they were kind of into that possibility. I mean, it's been a long time since they've wrestled each other. They did, you know, early in Brock's tenure, I know. Doubtful that there's anything set up there based on how they've kind of presented Jeff Hardy, but I do think that if they wanted to do like a quick program between them, it seems like the fans are very receptive to that. That's something that I kind of took away from that whole thing.
All right, very good. Our phone number, if you want to get in line on the phone banks, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. I don't think I gave the numbers out earlier, but everybody found it. And then we'll be here Monday night, too, covering the Raw side of the draft. And we'll have a lot more to talk about. So join us live then. You can always find the live stream to this show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's WadeKellerPostShow.com. Or you can find a link on Twitter. I usually post it right around the time the show ends or a few minutes earlier, at PWTorch on Twitter. And you can also find a link in my TV reports at our main website, PWTorch.com. And in my Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown reports, there are links to the live post show. So lots of ways to find us. I know most of you are downloading the show you know, late at night or the next morning, and that's great. But if you do want to join us and participate or just listen live and get our take right away, you're certainly invited to join us on the live stream. And on that note, you know what? We're giving out Twitter. Mike, tell people how they can follow you on Twitter.
You can find me at Mike Chiari, C-H-I-A-R-I, on Twitter. And also follow at Ring Rust Radio on Twitter.
Ring Rust Radio is a podcast you've been doing for how many years now? Do you even know? Can you count that high?
No, you know, math has never been my strong suit. It's been about 10 years that it's been in existence, and I've been on it, I think, for 9 years at this point. So,
wow.
Long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so check it out, guys. Search Ring Rust Radio on Google or on your podcast app. But we'll go into a little more detail on that later in the show, too. But I didn't want to wait to the very end to get that in. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at The Wade Keller, at The Wade Keller. All right, let's move next to Chris in Canada. Chris, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
Evening, gentlemen. Calling from the home of the great Canadian dollar store. I've been waiting to say that since you read my email on the fix, Wade. So it's been a couple of weeks, but it's callback is what we call it in the business, right?
I love it. I love it.
I just want to pick up on the discussion you were just having about the draft. The fact that we are asking these questions and debating them says that WWE completely messed up everything because we have no idea what they're doing. No 3-to-2 ratio. Why was Becky not available but Charlotte was? Why was Bianca chosen ahead of – I assume Damian Priest wasn't available. I assume Nakamura wasn't available. But we don't know. Even last few times they've done it this way – with the split roster, they've had on WWE.com who was available on the first night and who wasn't. And we have no idea what they're doing. So the whole draft thing just drives me insane. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I really want to pick up on something I'm surprised wasn't something that has been mentioned already. We have a triple threat women's match in whatever country Riyadh is in because they have never mentioned it on air ever, so we have no way of knowing. That's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about drawing a ton of attention to it because it's just like I don't want to be part of a bullhorn like talking about the great strides Saudi Arabia is making coming out of the 17th century and, you know, applauding them for allowing female athletes to wear sports gear to a ring. WWE propaganda that was bought and paid for early on made it seem like this is some, you know, really big cultural achievement that WWE's part of and we should all celebrate. And we soon learned it really isn't. There's nothing about that regime we're celebrating, or the backwards, slow to arrive culture that just is being, you know, marketed to try to get people to warm up to their post oil based economy, their post, you know, where they have to adapt to something else. And they just, you know, they blew it for a lot of reasons. So part of me is just like, yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying, Chris, but if we talk about it, now we're talking about. You know, we're almost like giving attention to a country that WWE doesn't even want to mention by name. So part of my not bringing it up is sort of like, I think not talking about it is sort of better than even criticizing it at this point, giving them that kind of attention. Mike, how do you feel about that? And then we'll go back to you, Chris, for your response to that.
Yeah, you know, I think everything that can be said about the Saudi Arabia WWE relationship situation has been said, really. I will say, you know, it's significant. It's just tough. Like, it's significant to have a women's match in Saudi Arabia. It is. It's not going to change anything that Saudi Arabia does, obviously. If nothing else, maybe it does, you know, maybe it opens the eyes of women that are in Saudi Arabia to see something like that and, you know, to, I don't know, get out of there or whatever. Like, I don't know, but it's significant for that reason. It is significant in WWE's history, but really above all else, I think the match itself, regardless of where it's taking place, that is a significant match. That's, you know, Sasha and Charlotte are two of the greatest of all time women's wrestlers. Bianca's on that path to be one of the greatest women's wrestlers of all time. They've all main evented a WrestleMania. I'm sorry, Becky, not Charlotte. They've all main evented a WrestleMania, and to, you know, put them all together in a match, like, that's a dream match for people probably, and something that we might not get for quite some time because of the draft. They're going to end up on different brands. So I think I'll just focus on the match itself and thinking that that could be one of the better women's matches we've seen in a long time, or maybe ever, as long as they're given the time, which obviously that's kind of tenuous given where it's taking place. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm excited for the match itself because of all the talent that's involved.
And Chris Perez, we're back to you. If we were talking about how Saudi Arabia is going to let the black wrestlers drink out of the same drinking fountain and be backstage at catering with the white wrestlers, and we're like, wow, I hope, you know, the citizens of Saudi Arabia see that and it opens their eyes. It's like, no, you shouldn't be doing business with someone in the first place who had that rule, and you're part of changing it. How about you change it and then we show up? We don't want to be part of you changing it. That's just BS PR that we're trying to pat ourselves on the back so the black wrestlers can drink out of a drinking fountain and eat in the same room as white people. Like, that would just be horrendous and unacceptable. So I don't want to be in the business of acting like this is some, you know, great moment forwarding women's rights in Saudi Arabia, that they're going to be inspired by what they see. WWE should have said, we're not coming there until you figure out, you know, what century we're in and how, you know, women should be treated in a civilized, advanced country. There's my little rant. Chris, back to you.
Glad I could set you off. No, I completely hear where you're going. I won't dwell on that for too often. I hate giving credit to it for anything along this route, but when you consider the first couple events they had there, women weren't even allowed in the country. Like, I don't even think Renee Young at the time was allowed off the plane, if I remember correctly. And now to see this, something is happening, but there's no credit. You don't give credit to someone for doing what they should be doing anyway. It's just worth pointing out, I think.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
Does Vince know what the word happy means? Because I don't think that's happy. He's got this weird and frankly kind of disturbing obsession with laughter at the moment. If it's not, it was Bailey, then it was Seth, and you had Sasha's, I don't even know what to call that. And I'm sorry to bring that up for you again. And now we've got, like, just this, we're going to stand here and laugh like absolute morons, whatever the Madcap Moss and the other idiot are doing. Like,
I thought it was Mad Cat, and then I learned it was Mad Cap.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's a Mad Cat?
Is what it is.
It's so dumb. I mean, yes. No, you're right. There is a weird, weird obsession. It seems, or I don't know, maybe obsession's not the word, but or a preoccupation or fascination, like just with incorporating, you know, laughter into gimmicks. I mean, Mike, you haven't been on in a while. Have you been on a journey with Happy Corbin where it's like, you know, sad Corbin was sort of fun, and then Happy Corbin was a nice turnaround, but now that he's a heel and he's like, talk about, you know, if you've been for or against it, or it's been a roller coaster ride.
I thought Down on His Luck Corbin was fantastic. Like, I looked forward to every week seeing, like, what horrible things would befall him, and seeing, like, them posted on Twitter and social media, and just seeing everything that happened with him. Like, I thought that was really fun, and I thought the comeback story was fun, too. And now we're kind of in a situation where it's like, well, this isn't so fun. This is just bizarre. And now I'm just kind of waiting and hoping that there's going to be another time where he loses all his money again and he's back to being sad Corbin, because that was the fun thing. And like, to the point of the laughing, like, if you notice, like, all these, you know, gimmicks that we mentioned with laughing, they're all heels. So it must be Vince feels like people annoyingly laughing is the greatest possible way to get heat. And I guess maybe in some cases it has worked, but maybe it's not the kind of heat that you really want to be getting. But heat nonetheless, I suppose.
Chris, anything else? I'm trying not to laugh because that just plays into the whole shtick.
No, I will let you get on to the no doubt hundreds of other calls you have. I'm not sure what's going on. Normally when Vince gets a fascination like this, you can trace it back to he's finally seen a movie of some description. I have no idea what it could be this time. But thanks for taking my call, gentlemen. And, it's just late, right? Enjoy the rest of your evening, folks. Thanks for
just
taking the
dark
call.
Night.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go next to San Diego. William calling us from the West Coast. William, good to hear from you. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Hey, how you guys doing? I thought it was okay. I think every year we kind of get excited about the draft beforehand, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of authority figures coming out and reading a list. The more exciting thing is what comes after, so, you know, it was okay. It was what it was. I actually wanted to talk about the whole Charlotte situation, but you also brought up Seth invading Edge's house, and that kind of put a bee in my bonnet, so I want to talk about that briefly. you mentioned Edge coming out, maybe like stealing his TV or something, and that whole segment kind of, it felt like a great setup with no real payoff, and we ended on Seth just sitting there eating an apple and then throwing it on the floor, and it felt like nothing really came of it. And I feel like you have the portrait in the background, and that portrait, I think, is a big missed opportunity. Like, you threw that idea of Seth coming out with the TV. What if he had walked out with the portrait and be like, okay, I got this from you, Edge. You want to come and take it? And then, I don't know, you can go to a portrait on a pole match or something. I know it's cheesy, but at least it's something.
I mean, there was room for like Home Alone hijinks. You know, like Seth could have tripped on a toy on the steps, and Seth could have been like, "Tell your kids not to leave their toys on the steps." And then, you know, there was room for like even. And they don't want to make it light. You know, they don't want to make it comedic.
Him running down the kids' artwork was pretty good, though.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah, they don't have a future in art. I was kind of waiting for that to come up. It does seem like there was maybe, you know, room for him to set off like the alarm by mistake and trying to turn it off. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm grateful they didn't do that. You know, because I'm like encouraging them to get into the business of writing comedy. But it did feel, if you're going to set that up and, like you said, do that stuff with the kids, at least have some sort of conclusion. I didn't have a big problem with him going in the house with the door unlocked. It's you know, when on the stairs you see a alarm code, you know, like panel. I think that's what it was. It sort of defies logic that they didn't set it, but I did like that they at least addressed it. You know, Seth going, I know you guys live in the middle of nowhere, but you should still lock your doors. I mean, I know people who live in the middle of nowhere and they don't lock their doors. It doesn't even cross their mind. And that's needed, you know, and they have their little, you know, doorstep cameras and all of that to kind of keep an eye on things. I didn't find that like too far-fetched. I was largely okay with it, but like you're saying, William, just can you write an ending to it? I mean, why not go back?
Yeah, I really thought they were going to go back to it. And then we had the main event, and to be completely honest, I completely forgot about it until you guys. The thing that I really wanted to talk about was Charlotte being the Raw champion and being on SmackDown now. I know you guys mentioned how last year, I believe, we had New Day as the SmackDown champions going to Raw and the Street Profits as the Raw champions going to SmackDown. And the way they paid that off, speaking of payoffs, it was just this lazy backstage segment where they essentially just exchanged the titles like that quickly. Nothing really came of it. Maybe I'm setting myself up for disappointment, but I don't really think that's going to happen again this year with Becky and Charlotte. I feel like we have, what is it, 3 weeks until the drafts, the picks really take effect. So I don't know. I think something more is going to happen. What do you guys think?
I don't. I think they're going to be, I think they're going to trade belts, or the officials are going to have, you know, Sonya and one segment's going to hand them over to the Raw title over to Charlotte and vice versa. I don't expect a lot. And I'm actually really just largely okay with it. I don't think it's lazy as much as just like, let's just get on with it. You know, I mean, you wanted to switch them. They had belts. It makes sense. You would switch the belts. And I mean, there are some things where I want attention to detail and something more elaborate. In this, I'm sort of like fine with it. If you're going to switch champs, just switch, you know, have them trade belts. And we might see that with the IC and US title too. Mike, how about you?
So it certainly wouldn't surprise me if they did that, seeing as they just did it last year. Although they were with the tag team championships and not the women's championships, which are, you know, I would say are more prestigious titles. What I wouldn't mind seeing happen is Charlotte moves over and then Becky or whoever the SmackDown Women's Champion is moves over to Raw, and maybe you just vacate both the titles. And they're not going to do a tournament, which I would love, because they have the King of the Ring, which we haven't mentioned that yet, the King of the Ring tournament and the Queen's Crown tournament, I believe they're calling it. But I wouldn't mind if they just vacate the titles and then you just have the top couple women on both brands wrestle for the title. That would probably be Becky against Bianca for the Raw Women's title, and it would probably be Charlotte versus Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's title. Just have the titles held in abeyance going into, I guess, Survivor Series it would be, and just, you know, have them wrestle for the titles. And then at least that way somebody's earning the title rather than just being handed it.
William, what do you think of that?
Yeah, because I think just them doing an exchange, an amicable exchange like last year, trail of both their characters, like Charlotte, I really can't imagine Charlotte and Becky like just exchanging belts like nothing, you know? I feel like Becky would put more of a fight and Charlotte would like throw up at the idea of even having to agree with Becky on something or whatever. But kind of moving on from that, I kind of went into this draft with the idea that overall USA Network would want to level a little more. And I kind of feel like that didn't happen. I feel like we still have another night to go, obviously, but overall this night to me felt more like a win to SmackDown than Raw. How do you guys think this night fared overall?
Yeah, so just to remind people what happened, SmackDown keeps Reigns, gains Charlotte, gained Drew, kept or gained Kofi and Xavier. I don't know where they were anymore. Happy, they kept Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. They gained Top Dollar from NXT.
They kept the Mad Cat.
Yeah. And then Naomi is planted on SmackDown. Jeff Hardy jumped from Raw to SmackDown. And on Raw, they kept Big E. They gained Bianca Belair, and they gained Edge, which was the biggest. Those were the two biggest gains. Riddle and Randy Orton stay put. Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash, I don't remember where they were, but they're on Raw.
They were technically Raw, I believe.
Yeah, so that just – then they stay. And then Keith Bearcat Lee gets to move to Raw – move to Mondays, according to Pat McAfee, even though he's always been on Mondays.
well, he was on No Days. Dominic. Now he's on Mondays.
That's a good point, yes. and then Ray and Dominic move to Raw? Yeah. And Austin Theory jumps from NXT to Raw. I mean, the thing is – Even if there's imbalance, I just, you know, there's going to be Monday, and I really think it's premature to spend a lot of time trying to decide who got the better of it. But, I mean, Edge for Drew, Belair for Charlotte, Reign Dominic for New Day, Keith Lee for Jeff Hardy, and then Austin Theory and Top Dollar get acquired. I mean, it seems to even out pretty decent, I think. Naomi and Ripley and Nikki, you know, the others I didn't mention. So, I don't know. It feels relatively equal as long as you don't just think, well, if SmackDown keeps Roman Reigns, that clearly makes it the A brand. But, you know, I mean, Raw's seen by, you know, 1.6 million, give or take, and SmackDown by 2.1 million, give or take. It's the A show. It's on broadcast TV. They're going to keep the top star, probably. I entertained the notion of Roman going to Raw. A little bit, but I mean, I'm not at all surprised that he stayed on SmackDown. So, Mike, your thoughts on the balance compared to how William framed it?
Yeah, I think you could argue that SmackDown got slightly better of it tonight because, as you mentioned, they got Roman Reigns. That's the biggest star in the company. But I don't think it was that unbalanced. And I think if you look at what potentially could happen on Raw, I mean, if they get Becky Lynch, then that's huge. And if they're getting Becky Lynch, then they're almost certainly getting Seth Rollins too, which is pretty significant. So, and even if they don't get Becky, they would probably get Sasha, which is big too. So I think that Raw's probably going to get the slightly better of it on Monday based on what we saw tonight. And then at the end of the day, I think it just kind of comes out in the wash. Ultimately, I just want to see different matchups, fresh feuds, and I think that we're at least on the road to getting to that based on what we saw tonight, because we're going to have a lot of different people mixing it up moving forward, and I think that's a good thing at least.
Yeah. William, any reaction to that and closing words otherwise?
No, yeah, I kind of agree with you. It's kind of premature to talk too much about it right now. The only reason I brought it up is because of that idea that, yeah, you know, Raw has been kind of lacking in star power for the last year. So I didn't really go into it with the idea of, okay, it has to be balanced. I saw it more as, okay, Raw has to gain a lot of stars in order to come up to the level of SmackDown. But I guess we'll see how that plays out on Monday. That's all I really have.
All right, very good. William, great to hear from you again. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah. Good topics, good comments. Yep, take care. Have a good weekend. All right, we'll jump next here to Jay in Michigan. Jay, thanks so much for calling. What did you think of SmackDown tonight?
Well, thanks for having me. And, you know, anytime you open up the budget for Big Money Mike, your boy Main Event Jay has to call. What's going on, brother?
How you doing? Hey,
man, you know, I'm living, man. Lauren Jay is hanging in there.
I hear you.
How about you? Good to hear from you, man.
Good. I'm with talking to Wade Keller.
And how there are you, Wade? respect to the host, always.
All right. I'm blushing. Go ahead, guys. What do you think, Jay?
I always enjoy the draft episodes, man. No matter what, you know, they just. This is the excitement of new, potentially new feuds and new matches and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I don't know what all you guys covered, but I think off, you know, starting at the top, I believe that the Usos are going to end up getting drafted to Raw, but there's going to be some type of, like, forceful threat from Roman. I could see Roman even showing up on Raw and, like, forcing a trade where – you know, I guess maybe you get New Day going back over to Raw, because I feel like Bobby Lashley's going to end up on SmackDown facing Roman for a little while with I guess the Hurt Business, and, you know, that's going to be next to him after Brock. So I don't know if you guys covered that, but what do you think of that idea?
I think the Usos are going to end up on SmackDown. I don't think they're going to tell a story there. I can't rule it out, Jay. I mean... But my inclination is that Heyman will deliver for Roman, and it was supposed to be on SmackDown. I think we'll see all of Hurt Business end up on SmackDown, and then we'll see Seth end up, you know, kind of not even trade in that it's one wrestler, but I think Seth is probably somebody. I'm trying to think who else, maybe Apollo Crews or Sammy. Or Gable and Otis. I mean, they'll even it out. But to me, like, the big switch next week on the men's side will be Seth and Lashley with Hurt Business. That's the big move yet to take place. And then maybe Sheamus and Shinsuke. Are they the two secondary champs right now, Mike?
Priest and Shinsuke are.
Oh, thank you. Priest. Yeah, something wasn't right there. So I think Priest and Shinsuke will also trade brands, because that sets up Priest as an opponent for Reigns down the line too, if they want to go that route. And then, although I don't know, I don't, McAfee, what's going to happen if McAfee doesn't get to react to Boogs?
I know.
Maybe
that'd
I got to revise that.
Luck.
I mean, that's, yeah, I don't know if McAfee will even.
This SmackDown felt empty without a Rick Boogs entrance.
Yeah. Like, I have to rethink this. Maybe they won't do that. So anyway, Mike, any thoughts?
I think the theory is interesting, because I do think it's a possibility that they run some kind of angle with the Usos, because they really leaned into it. Like, they Roman was very adamant that the Usos had better be on SmackDown, or else you're going to be a big trouble, Paul. Like, essentially, like, kind of telling us that there's maybe a possibility that something's going to happen there. And if they do get drafted to Raw, and then there has to be some kind of trade, I think that would be a good way to do it, trade New Day back over, because I think that was the one that one of the picks that people were kind of rolling their eyes at, because it's like, we just got the New Day back together. Everybody's loving it. Everybody's excited that they're all together again. And then they get drafted. They split them up for the second draft in a row. And they had only been back together for like a few weeks at this point. So I really would prefer New Day to be on Raw, to be with Big E. And I would obviously prefer the Usos to be on SmackDown to be with Roman. But I don't know that that will happen, because I do think that Kofi and Xavier Woods against the Usos, reprising that, long-running feud, and having them, go at it for the tag team titles on SmackDown would be good, especially because you have to assume the Street Profits are moving over to Raw, with Bianca Belair having moved over to Raw tonight. So the SmackDown tag team division is going to be a little bit light if you only have the Usos or you only have New Day. So I think they ultimately probably both end up on SmackDown.
And by the way, with all the talk of the draft and all that's been conducted so far, like after night one, I mean, I give them a B+. I'm fine. I mean, I would have liked to have seen a lineup of who was eligible. That keeps them from, an A-. But I mean, it's just, now we have all weekend to speculate. And Monday too, leading into Raw, they gave us, we're kind of wondering, was that person eligible? Weren't they? I think they kind of wanted to leave us wondering, or Vince just didn't get around to thinking about everything yet, whatever the reason is. But overall, I mean, nothing jumps out as like, why did they pick that wrestler? Even Top Dollar and Austin Theory, it's like, you can imagine them going for, a surprise later round pick to try to get a up and coming star or two. So I think there was enough logic behind it and enough suspense. And I like, as soon as they make that announcement, I'm like, okay, now I got to recalibrate in my head. What does this mean? Who are they going to wrestle with? And I like that Drew, I like that they interviewed wrestlers who got drafted. I thought that was a nice touch. And Drew declaring he's coming after the Universal title right away, I think was important for Drew to establish I'm still a top guy. So all in all, I think they got a B+ for tonight. I'm not really I don't have a lot of complaints.
Yeah, I think overall they did a good job, and I talk about it every time they do a draft. There's a lot of things they could do to make it better that they just probably aren't ever going to do to make it feel like a real draft. But I thought the picks overall were fine, and I think that the rosters are shaping up in an intriguing way, and a lot of good matchups can come out of it. But the one thing you mentioned, the previous caller mentioned it, the thing where they really failed is that they didn't release a list of who's draft eligible, because I think if people didn't really realize what the deal was, they would say, how does, Becky Lynch not get drafted tonight? I don't understand. Why would you take, why would you take Hit Row over Becky Lynch or whatever it might be? Well, it's because she wasn't eligible to be taken tonight, but they didn't tell us the eligible wrestlers. Like, even if you weren't going to put it on social media, at the top of the show, just show us a list, show us a graphic, and we know who can be drafted and who cannot be drafted. And I think that would have made the draft a lot more enjoyable, even, because at least you would know, who to expect to potentially be drafted in that scenario. You don't even have to show like the surprise like NXT people, but at least show us, the main roster people who could have been drafted, so that we're not wondering why Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch and all those types of people weren't drafted tonight.
Yeah, I think that would be underestimates how much detail we would like. Mm-hmm. The more attention to detail and the more details for us to speculate, sink our teeth into it, and just make sense of it. And it's respecting the audience, because then they have to think through it all. And they have to make sure everything makes sense. And you don't want them not to do things because they don't want to think hard about it, or it won't make sense if they do. But it comes across that way sometimes. It's either they think no one cares, or they think if they get too detailed, it won't allow them to do what they want. And I think we just want them to work a little harder for it to make sense and give us that structure and the format and the details. All right, Jay, back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah, man, just a couple more things. I totally agree. Like, it would be nice to know who's available. That would have made a lot of sense and made the whole draft in general a little more entertaining to watch. But I didn't have a problem with a lot of the picks, because I feel like if Raw gets Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins, everything will equal its way out. And also, I think that, for Raw, they would be like best served to kind of focus on their mid-card with the show being 3 hours. Like, I could see somebody like Sami Zayn and you know, Bayley, when she comes back, just working wonders with all that extra time that they'd have when on SmackDown. It just kind of seems like it should be a top-heavy show because of the two-hour format. So, you know, I don't have any real issues with the draft. My other question or, you know, comment would be that I think that it seems like they're going to do something, like some type of match between Charlotte and Becky to me. You know, I heard you guys talking about it a little bit with the previous caller. I think they're going to do something, but I don't know exactly how they're going to, you know, like figure this thing out. I've even, like, wrestled with the idea of Becky being on both shows just because she's like that. But, you know, it feels like they're going to do something, but I'm all about seeing Charlotte and Sasha, you know, re-spark their rivalry, man, and just go at it. I don't care about heels and faces. I know that they do, but, you know, just let them two go and let everybody figure out what they got to figure out from around that. But I feel like Sasha's going to have a huge chip on her shoulder because she kind of got bumped for Becky, and Charlotte just needs a quality opponent to typically bring the best out of her. So, you know, I think that's something that I'm looking forward to.
Cool. Jay, appreciate the comments. Mike and I'll respond to it. Appreciate the call.
Of course, man. Y'all take care.
Have a good one, man.
Yep, you too. So we have the Queen's Crown Tournament, and that might address some of what Jay is just talking about. You know, they announced the King of the Ring and Queen's Crown Tournament for next week on SmackDown and Raw. Do you have a sense if it'll finish the following week? Or I don't know if that's another case where they might not want us to know. It's not going to be completely all in 1 week, but either way, that does give a chance for some face-face, heel-heel, who cares, just seeing them against each other. We have this stretch of 3 weeks before, let's see, we got the 8th and 10th, and then what is the date of Crown Jewel? The 21st?
So 21st, so then the next day, the 22nd, which is a SmackDown, that's when the rosters are switched over.
So we have two more Fridays of SmackDown with blended rosters. And to me, it's sort of a sneaky way to merge the brands and have a bunch of dream matches. You know, you can kind of keep some that you don't do, but you can do others. And it's a bit of a rating stunt for, quote, the new fall season. And I'm fine with it. I mean, they need a little, you know, something extra. And this might help, you know, SmackDown get above 2.3, maybe touch on 2.4 million if they build it right. And, you know, they dropped under 2.2 million this past Friday. And with Raw, you know, to keep a demo lead over AEW Dynamite, which they certainly want to do. I think Jay's going to get some of his wishes over the next couple of weeks, especially with the tournament format where it's sort of a wild card setup where you can book matches you wouldn't book otherwise.
Yeah, and as far as the tournament goes, they said it was going to start on SmackDown and it was going to continue on Raw. And, you know, I don't know the reality of when it's going to end, but I know that there have been rumors out there, and obviously you take a lot of those with a grain of salt, that the King of the Ring and the Queen's Crown Tournament would have the finals at Crown Jewel, which I think would kind of make sense from a timeline perspective because you could stretch out that tournament over the course of a couple weeks on Raw and SmackDown and then do the finals at the pay-per-view. So I could see that being a possibility. Maybe even, you know, with the Queen's Crown Tournament, you could somehow make one of the titles be on the line for that instead of just becoming a queen if you win. That could maybe kind of solve the issue that you have with your Raw Women's Champion moving to SmackDown and vice versa potentially. So I'd be interested to see how they kind of play that out. But I would almost rather that be the prize than you get a crown and you have to pretend to be a queen for 2 years. Because that's essentially what we get in the King of the Ring all the time.
I know. Yes. All right. We've got a number of calls to get to. We will try to keep the pace swift as we go to Sean and Nick, and a couple of people dropped off, understandably so. It's getting late. But we'll go to Sean first from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, good to hear from you. What do you think of SmackDown?
Oh, well, first, Wade, you're the man as always. Mike, it's always good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, man? Good to talk to you.
Oh, always good to talk to you guys. Well, just going back to what you were quickly saying about King of the Ring and Queen's Crown, that's why I'm worried about that because, you know, that's all they've done with it is just a stupid gimmick of, you know, like you said, wearing the crown. And that's where I'm afraid they're going to go. And I just don't want them to do that. I want them to get away from that, make it a serious tournament, or whoever wins becomes a bigger star because of it, not a lesser funny, dumb gimmick thing where they just don't care about it. And so that's what I hope they do something, you know, better with that, because I was kind of dreading it when I saw it on the screen. And going back to what you said about Drew, I did like that they, you know, gave him the interview and gave people interviews. And I do think this is going to be a great thing for Drew. I'm excited about it. Yeah, he's a little on the cooler side right now, but he'll get heated up when he's facing some different guys and going back to where he needs to go. I wanted to say for the draft, just one thing about the draft is I really hope they bring some of these NXT women up. I mean, I know Hit Row's, you know, a Vince type of gimmick, and that's fine for bringing them up first. And, you know, Theory has potential. Like, it's fine. But I just – some of these NXT women, I really hope they get drafted Monday, because we need the Io Shirai's and the Dakota Kai's. We need some of them to get some life back in this women's division other than the top-heavy people. Like, we need to have it all balanced. And so what do you guys think about that? Do you think Dakota and Io might officially get drafted Monday, or which NXT people do you think might get drafted Monday?
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I feel fairly confident that Dakota Kai is probably a lock to get called up, because she hasn't been seen in NXT ever since she lost to Raquel Gonzalez in that title match. So I'd be pretty surprised if she wasn't called up at this point. Xia Li is another name I would expect, because we haven't seen her since she lost to Raquel, and Tian Sha over the past several weeks has just been Mei Ying and Boa, and Xia Li hasn't been part of that equation. So I would anticipate her getting called up. I would love to see Io Shirai get called up, although I'm not sure that's going to happen at this point. I thought maybe she and Zoe Stark were going to lose the tag team titles this week on NXT. They retained. It obviously not unprecedented for an NXT champion to get called up. I mean, Isaiah Swerve Scott just got called up today, and he's the North American champion. But I do think Io getting called up, I think that's the move at this point, because NXT, they're moving towards, you know, building up younger stars now, less experienced stars, and molding them into what WWE wants them to be. Io Shirai doesn't really fit that mold. She already is a star. She's very experienced. I think she's a better fit for the main roster at this point. So I agree. I would love to see, you know, all those women that I just mentioned get called up potentially. Also on the men's side, just one person to mention, LA Knight, I think, is an excellent fit for the main roster. I think Vince would love him if he really got to see him on a consistent basis, and I think he could thrive on the main roster.
He can be kind of his new Miz, you know, a guy you don't expect to be a world title contender, but he can fill some TV time. And, you know, kind of what Sami Zayn is doing now. You can argue Sami's being underutilized, but, you know, in the kind of comedic role, even though he does a fantastic job with it. Yeah, I think those are a lot of good points. Sean, any response to that or anything else you want to bring up?
No, LA Knight, yeah, I'm with you. He was another guy I was thinking was going to come up, you know, just because Vince would love him. And he's great on the mic, so I think that'd be fine. Well, two quick things I was going to bring up. The first was, oh, Liv Carmella, what was that, guys? What was that? Like, can they? Oh gosh, I know Carmella's probably moving to Raw. I'm assuming, and whatever. Carmella just kind of is what she is, the most beautiful woman in WWE. Like, really, how is that wrestling related? And then Liv, I mean, she's got potential, but wait, I'm with you. Like, she's got to do something different. I don't know. I'm not. They're doing. They can still. They still have time, but gosh, I just stopped doing this with Liv and Carmella. Like, oh my gosh, it's just so bad. And then the match with Sasha and Bianca, I mean, it was good. It wasn't the WrestleMania match, of course, but it wasn't supposed to be. You knew what kind of finish you were going to get. But were you surprised that they had Bianca lose? And what did you think of Becky on commentary? Because I loved her on commentary, because when Michael started going off about what a triple threat, you know, and he's like, I know what happened. I was in a triple threat. I won the triple threat. You know, and it was like, oh, man, I just loved her. So what did you guys think of the match or the distraction? And what did you guys – or Bianca losing, what did you think of Becky on commentary?
Sure, yeah. So a few things there to cover. I'll try to remember them. You too, Mike. One thing about Liv Morgan is last week I was real critical. I felt that she – came out of the stage and made her way to the ring looking like she was heading to a cheesy wet t-shirt contest, and she was trying to kiss up to all the drunk guys in the crowd, shaking her stuff and going, vote for me. Like, I just thought it was demeaning. I don't want every woman to come out like it's the diva era, just sexualizing themselves and trying to titillate the male audience. I feel like she can do better than that. Then she came out Sunday with a whole new look, and she dropped some of the, you know, shaking her chest and just whatever that was that she did last week that I was just like, this is, it's a wrong era, and she deserves better than a character like that. And there's heels doing that already. And I thought it was better this week. Like, I think it was a step in the right direction. I'm not quite sure I can describe her fully, but there is sort of an alternate edge to her now. It maybe overlaps a little Rhea Ripley in some of her look, but I just want to get to know her better, and they've been all over the place with her. Not quite as much as Brandi Rhodes in AEW, but, you know, what is her core identity? And let us get to know her a little bit, and don't assume knowledge of the past because they've been too scattershot with it, and certainly don't assume any social media knowledge for the larger audience. So I think they're moving in the right direction with her, and this was a better week. And I was so critical of her last week, I wanted to make that point. As for Becky and commentary, Mike, she was leaning full in on being a heel, just whining, whining in a way where if you have a propensity to cheer for her, you're going to be second-guessing that, and certainly that's her goal. There had to be a finish, and it just felt, you know, I mean, Bianca losing with her braid being held, it's fine. It's what WWE does, and, you know, that's what they do. So, I mean, I'm not loving it, but it's like, I don't think it's a big deal. It, you know, I think fans watch that and go, well, that doesn't prove anything. And it's, too often WWE has finishes where nothing is proven, and that's certainly a valid point. But taken in just sort of a micro example here, yeah, they presented the match. They wanted to get out of it without a finish, and so they had Becky get involved. Your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, on the subject of Liv Morgan and Carmella too, I like them both. I think they're both very talented, but I think they've both been plagued by these start and stop pushes over the past couple of years. And it's very clear that fans want Liv Morgan to be pushed, and they want her to, you know, maybe get into that title mix at some point. But I do agree, like, you know, we don't really know what her character is per se, and maybe part of that is because she's gotten such inconsistent television time over the years. So hopefully, you know, something happens there. Although this Carmella Liv Morgan feud not working for me at all, I'm hoping that they end up on different brands. And I think there's a good chance that happens with Carmella going to Raw. So hopefully that's the case. As far as, you know, the main event situation, I thought Becky was excellent on commentary. I think she's been doing a great job as a heel, and I know a lot of people were skeptical of that decision to turn her heel. I was in on it from the start. I thought it was a great decision because she was at her best when she was at least acting like a heel during her previous run. And then when she had that dominant babyface run as champion, I never felt like it was as good. I felt like this was her best role. She's doing great with it. She's been effective in it because people have embraced Bianca Belair even more. And as far as the match finish goes, I wasn't too surprised because typically when somebody switches brands via the draft, they do a lot of the time lose on the way out of that other brand. And since Bianca's going to Raw, I think they kind of view that as a clean slate, not a big deal if she loses a match to Sasha, especially if Sasha's going to be staying on SmackDown. Her beating Bianca Belair, even with shenanigans, I think that, you know, that's a hallmark win, and that makes her a contender for the SmackDown Women's Championship against Charlotte or whatever the case is going to be. So I didn't have a problem with the finish because, like Wade said, it was, you know, her holding Becky holding the braid. It wasn't a clean win by any means. And I think that nobody's going to end up getting hurt by that coming out of it.
And if you're going to be a professional athlete trying to win prize fights, as Kevin Owens would say, it's time to, you know, bundle up the hair or something. I mean, like, you can't, I mean, there is part of me that's like, you know, she gets what she deserves. She's going to twirl that thing around like a big gimmick. It's hard to take her seriously. I mean, and I know it's pro wrestling and people kind of get it, but at this, you know, get that it's, if this were MMA, she certainly wouldn't wear the braid like that fighting. But there is sort of a little part of me that's like, yeah, go Becky, you know, if she's going to be more worried about her gimmick and her appearance than being a professional athlete trying to win matches. Although she does use it as a weapon, so I guess.
I mean, I think if people were allowed to use it as a weapon in UFC, they would definitely have a big braid.
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, then the opponent, you get to, like, wrap it around your neck and choke you out.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's like in the NFL. If you have long hair, you're allowed to pull the person down by the hair.
Is that
part
true?
Of their – yeah, yeah. If they're running, you can pull their hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. Sean, I don't even – Sean, did we say goodbye to you or not? I'm losing track here.
Well, I wanted to say really fast, KO losing to Happy Corbin was, you know, again, I'm assuming KO is going to leave at some point when his contract's up, but it's just so sad to see what's happened to him. And Nick, I wanted to give Nick and Brattleboro, just give him some love. I haven't officially given him love. I've given Javier love, and he's always a great call, so I'm excited to hear his call. Kyle, I was really wanting to hear from him tonight because I know he was there. I really wanted to hear what he was saying about the women's division and all the pops, and I was really kind of curious if he was going to, you know, I wanted to hear what he thought about it. So I hope he, when he calls hopefully soon, he can tell us about, you know, what it was like being there. But, Mike, good to talk to you, man. You're the best. Wade, you're great as always. And, guys, appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. It's as if he looked at our switchboard, because up next is Kyle and then Nick from Brattleboro. Kyle, welcome to the show. Did you go? Did you go? Did you end up going?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. It was fine. It was
cool.
Cool. It was cool.
Yeah.
I tried to call I tried to call her. My phone died. It was a whole episode. I had to wait till I get home to charge it. So yeah, I probably did. But yeah, it was. So
no problem.
It was a lot. but yeah, it was fun. I haven't went to a show since beginning of 2019. It was back in April 2019. It was the final that done before WrestleMania. So, but yeah, I was there, and it was so cool to see. It was so fun. It was like the best episode of that that I've ever seen, because this is my third time I went, and it was like the best one. So I enjoyed it. It was really cool. So, man, I don't know what to talk about first, really. I think I'll go straight to the main event to see them. My whole thought was like, I want to see Sasha, Becky, and Bianca live in person all at the same time, and I did. I was like, yes, they got it, did. And so, when he did Bianca and Sasha, that match was great. It was really just awesome. I was pretty much there. Sasha was looking freaking like God. Sasha was looking really good on live in person. First time seeing her live, I was like, whoa. So it was cool. The match was good. I was kind of distracted because it was really a good match. So I didn't really compare the WrestleMania match, because it was just right. It was like, it was good. Well, I saw it. Yeah, and then seeing Sasha win, I was happy about that too, because it was seeing Bianca going to Raw, I kind of figured that much weeks ago, because it just made sense to me, because I didn't think she was going to take the title from Becky as it is, but they did draft Charlotte to SmackDown. I was like, okay, well, what, they're going to draft Becky to SmackDown, and then Raw and Sasha to Raw. I was kind of surprised that they didn't even get drafted. I was expecting that to be tonight. US top stars, but you have to wait until Monday. I thought that's really interesting, but whatever. I found that fascinating. Involving Hit Row, they were there at the beginning of the show. I kind of missed them a little bit because I was still trying to kill. So I saw them when they were about to leave, but they were there at the beginning of the show. It was really cool to see them in person for a few seconds. I saw them. So the fact that they were drafted to SmackDown, I like it. I wonder what that means for Isaiah Swerve Scott with the North American Championship. What does that mean with him? How is he going to lose that bout, or is he going to relinquish that? That's going to be really interesting. What do you think about that? Because he's the North American Champion currently, and he got drafted to SmackDown, which is cool. But what do you think was happening with that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could hold up the title and have a tournament. They could have him wrestle both on NXT and SmackDown. They could just book him to lose between now and then. It would feel a little contrived. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, typically when this happens, when somebody who holds a title on NXT gets called up, they'll just drop the title, you know, in whatever their next match is. And I think it wouldn't feel too contrived in this situation, because he's been in a pretty long-term feud with Legado del Fantasma and Santos Escobar. And I think it would be very easy to have a match between Santos Escobar and Isaiah Swerve Scott coming up. Santos Escobar beats him for the title, and you move forward from there. And I think, you know, it would be a good move. Santos Escobar, I think, is great. He's a very complete performer. I think he'd be a good person to put that title on. And then you can just kind of move forward with Hit Row on SmackDown from there.
Yeah. Kyle, how does that sound?
Yeah. I think that makes sense. You know, yeah, I just found out this so fascinating. And yeah, involving the Silk, just you have. I still can't get over it. So I'm thinking back from, I guess, 2 years ago when he had drafts in 2019. First draft back, he went to that net. She doesn't even get drafted at all. So that's like, whoa. I was like very shocked. I was like, wait a minute. Was Becky your top star? And, you know, you was in, and yet you had to wait till Monday. I mean, whatever. I think I just find that so bizarre. He decided to draft Roman Reigns first. And he went to SmackDown all of a sudden. But, you know, their rules are very bizarre, because I thought, you know, Raw was first and SmackDown was second. But yet he said, nope, Reigns, SmackDown first. Forget it. We're just doing that. And so I was like, okay, well then. So, what else would happen tonight? I almost forgot. I think it was when it was Edge, when he said a poem with Seth Rollins. I was kind of disappointed to see Rollins, because like I was thinking I was going to see him, but with him not being there, I was like, whatever. And I'm surprised they're still doing this feud. At this point, it's starting to get really boring. I don't know. I'm starting to get kind of annoyed now. So it was good at first, and now it started to ugh. So I know that Edge going to Raw, and Raw's didn't know where he's going yet. So wherever, if Raw stays on SmackDown, that'll be kind of good. So we just get them away from each other, or just because I want to just be kind of over with now and have Edge move on to a new feud with. What do you think about that whole segment? I know we kind of talked about that.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a bit about it. I mean, I think we're getting to the end of a lot of things. I don't want to punt too much, but you know. On analyzing this, but I just feel like if you think a feud is old, there's a very good chance that it's not going to continue. Now, if Seth goes to Raw, Edge has gone to Raw, Mike, there's a chance they just end up, you know, Kyle won't be happy, but they could end up both on Raw and this could go on for a while longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do both end up on Raw. My guess would be that we get the conclusion to this at Crown Jewel. I assume they would want to have Edge on that show if possible. And then even if they're on the same brand, I think that might be for the most part the end of it, because then you have Survivor Series coming up in November, and generally you're having brand versus brand matches between champions, between teams. So I think you would kind of pivot there, and you know, maybe Seth and Edge would even end up on the same team potentially in a Survivor Series match, or maybe Edge takes some time off because obviously he's a part-time wrestler. But my, you know, guess would be that we're going to see their final match against each other probably at Crown Jewel.
Kyle, anything else from your in-person experience you want to bring up? What it was like, or anything that stood out to you that you're going to remember most?
I think it was Roman Reigns himself. My first time ever seeing him in person, and it was really cool. He was really during the dark match. He was talking to the audience, but the audience was cheering Reigns. He was like beyond cheered. I really didn't get any booze from Reigns. He's kind of getting cheered, so because he just has that cool factor. Because everybody liked him, and I did too, because I'm a Reigns fan. I became a Reigns fan. I can never say I really was a Reigns fan back in 2015 or 16. Really, I didn't really care about him. I was like indifferent with Reigns. I didn't hate the guy, but I didn't like him either. But ever since he became a heel, I became a really big fan of his, and he's been really entertaining. And seeing him in person for the first time, and this character was like, wow, it was really cool. Because he did get a lot of cheers, and I cheered the crap out of him too, because he just has that cool factor. And you know, with the Usos as well, cool. it was a cool dynamic seeing that. But yeah, that was maybe what they talk about everything else. I think I was kind of disappointed a little bit that we didn't see Shotzi Blackheart taking Knox at all, because after what happened last week, you know, they had that face off with Natalya Tamina. I thought they were going to be able to do something with them tonight, but I guess it would wait till next week, or if there could be a Raw, who knows. But that was my only disappointment that we didn't see them at all. They were coming off last week, but I guess that was it. It was a really good show. I enjoyed it. I missed going to a show. It felt like it was great. So, and it makes me want to do it again, because you know, it's really like, yeah. They said they already announced that they're going to be doing a holiday thing in December back in Baltimore. It was like a live event in December, so I'll try to get that to do that if I can in December. So, but overall, it was a good show, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. Cool. Kyle, glad we got to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep, you bet. All right. We'll go next to Nick in Brattleboro by request from Sean. Nick, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Good evening. How are you guys doing, Mike? Good to talk to you. And a huge shout-out and props to Sean. I always enjoy hearing his comments. And Chris, and I tend to, you know, are in an orbit together on the phone lines there. So, Sean, thank you very much. I appreciate the comments. Kyle touched a little bit on this, and I missed the earlier on-site correspondent, but I definitely heard, at least, you know, on the television, whether WWE was trying to mute it or not, but Reigns seemed to be getting 70% cheers, at least. I mean, you know, and I know it's, I mean, he you know, and I don't think people are cheering what his character is doing. I think they're giving him some props, at least when he's not fighting, you know, and it's not a booing issue, but he was way over, I thought, when he came out. And that's a long entrance.
Yeah, Mike, what's your take on the crowd reactions for Reigns and what they're going for? Because obviously when you know, Heyman says Baltimoreans, you know, the crowd's going to boo, and they like Lesnar. So what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think for the most part since fans came back, the reaction's been pretty positive. Not always the fact. It really depends on what he's doing and what he's saying and what Heyman is saying. But I think really more than anything, the cheers are just respect for what he's been able to do and how he's been able to improve and really come into his own, and just kind of a tip of the cap that, you know, he's been as good as he has been for the past year. I don't see it as a real problem. Obviously, he's your top heel, so, you know, generally you're looking for heat, you're looking for boos. But I think a lot of that also depends on who he's facing at the time. I think that, you know, Brock Lesnar, I would say, got an even bigger, huge reaction. So I think you could say that in that sense, it was still a success because people were cheering for Brock Lesnar too. Not necessarily a bad thing for everybody to just be cheering for both of them. Obviously, it's not the traditional, you know, professional wrestling, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think that at least, you know, Roman Reigns is getting a significant reaction, and it's not the type of reaction where it's just like, you know, we don't want you to even be here. People are excited to see him, and that's understandable because he's the biggest star. And as long as he's getting the reaction, I think that they can work with it, and it's fine. And again, if you're putting him against strong baby faces, I think that, you know, you're still going to get some people to boo him, and you're going to get people to be behind the baby faces, even though they like Roman Reigns too. So as long as WWE puts him with the right people, I don't think it's going to pose any real issues. And I don't foresee a baby face turn in the near future, at least.
Oh, I hope not.
Nick, back to you.
Yeah, no, I hope we don't see, you know, a babyface turn, at least for, I don't know, 2 years. You know, let this play out, you know. But just want a quick comment going back to the pay-per-view and just my own personal reaction to everything we've been through in the last 2 years. I thought it was so cool that he had Heyman hand him a mask when he went into the crowd. I thought he's got... You know, he's a cancer. He's a cancer survivor. He's got to be. It was like perfect, and making a statement without making a statement. I thought it was great. You know, 90% of the people aren't going to register that, but someone will, and that may save their life. And I just thought that was great. Get off my soapbox here. I'm going to propose this to you. Is Alexa gets another match against Charlotte and beats her. Sasha wins the triple threat in that other place. And then everyone can move as they want without having the title issues that seemed so weird. It really shocked me when Charlotte got drafted. I was like, huh? Because it was, like, so natural for Bianca to go to Raw and go after Charlotte. It was just so natural. Yeah. It was like so perfect.
Okay. Go ahead, Mike. Any reaction to that?
Yeah.
No. I didn't hear a question mark at the end. It was more of a.
It was open.
So we're making sure you were done. Yeah, it was more open ended. So, but no, that's good. So, go ahead, Mike. Your thoughts?
Yeah. So, again, rumors. Take them with a grain of salt. But the rumor is that Alexa is going to be taking some time away. So I don't know that that's going to be a possibility. I know she's getting married somewhat soon, so I think that might be part of it. I think she also underwent some type of minor surgery. So I don't know that that's going to be a possibility. So I mentioned before, I think that it probably comes down to Bianca and Becky continuing their feud, but instead of over the SmackDown women's title, it's over the Raw women's title coming out of this. And whether that's through trading titles or through vacating titles, I don't really know that yet, but I do think that ultimately we're going to still have Becky against Bianca coming out of this, because that feud obviously hasn't been resolved. And then I think probably going back to the old standby of Sasha versus Charlotte, at least for a while on SmackDown.
Just heel, just let it rock. Just let them go. Cause they do have good matches together. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that Iron Man match they had that was so good. It's an image that's locked in my head where Sasha is bending Charlotte through and over the metal beam in the middle of the row. I mean, they had some great matches together. But I think they definitely have to bring people up from NXT because they're so top heavy, and the lower level women just don't. They haven't built them at all. They need. I mean, I think Io Shirai would be fabulous. If it's against Becky,
yeah,
you have her keep her face kind of attitude, and if it's Bianca, she can go back to her heel persona that she had in NXT initially. There's so much there with Io, with Dakota Kai, but they've got to get some second level women because they have first tier and then third tier, and then there's like this big gap in the middle, and they can't move anybody up against these people. Question mark.
Yeah, there we go. Go ahead, Mike. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that the female talent they have in WWE, taking all brands into account, it's impressive. They have a ton of talent. I don't know that the issue, for me at least, on the main roster is as much the talent gap as it is the television time gap, where you have all this investment in the very top, and the Sashas and Biancas and Beckys and Charlottes of the world, and then the others, you're not really giving that much TV time. I think the tide might be turning a little bit, though. I'm a little bit encouraged because we've got this interesting Naomi versus Sonya Deville thing brewing, which very clearly seems like you're going to have Sonya coming back as a wrestler, which is a great thing because she's an excellent heel. You're building up Shayna Baszler finally, and she's looking like she's going to potentially be a dominant force. And then you are probably going to bring up some women. I think I mentioned before Dakota Kai, I think, is very likely going to come up. Xia Li, I think, is very likely going to come up. Io Shirai is a possibility, and I would love to see her come up. Asuka right now is injured. I don't know the extent of that, but when she comes back, that's another huge boost. So the talent's there. It's just about dividing that time properly and giving other women outside of the very tippy top a chance to shine, a chance to be in secondary storylines. I don't know that they will do it, but I think that the pieces are there to make it happen. So I hope that it does happen.
Yeah, it's the secondary storyline.
All right, Nick.
I'll let you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. I was just going to say, if you had any closing words or anything for us. Very good.
That's it.
Thanks, Nick. Good, yeah, good discussion that you and Mike definitely had there.
Good night.
I want to get to Javier before he – yep, good night, Nick. Always good to hear from you. Well, We'll now move to Javier, who has been on hold and ready to join us, PW Torch VIP podcaster, pwtorch.com contributor. Javier, welcome back.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Mike. Mike, I think it's been since April 23rd since you've been on. That was a lot longer than I thought you had been.
Oh, my goodness. I took a Sasha Banks or Brock Lesnar break, you know?
For the record, I've asked multiple times, and
yeah.
Mike had busy stuff going on with work, so I
yeah,
wasn't avoiding
August,
him.
August, I was supposed to come on, but covering the Olympics was just a lot going on. So, but we made it happen for October 1st, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was thinking about you. I'm like, man, I haven't heard from you in a while. But good to talk to you now, man.
Yeah, you too.
Just wanted to bring up something you mentioned. They did mention that only half of the roster was going to be on there, and I'm going to paraphrase what DeVille said, so maybe unfairly, but she basically said, before we reveal the fifth pick, I want to remind you that we're only selecting from half of the roster, so number five is really number nine or ten. I felt it pertinent to bring it now for you so you don't get too excited for what is realistically our number 9 or 10 pick, Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, I didn't take it that way. I mean, I think when she reminded us of that, I think the idea was don't be shocked when you don't hear Becky Lynch's name or you don't hear you know, Seth Rollins' name. Like, there's top tier, Bobby Lashley, there's top tier people that aren't going to be drafted. And I'm just announcing, you know, I just want to make sure you guys realize that's why. And without making it seem like, hey, all the big names have been picked already, I felt it was sort of a preemptive thing of, you know, don't freak out that the big names that you would expect to hear before some of these others you're not hearing yet.
Right. And they didn't do themselves a service by not listing who was and who wasn't available. But with that said, I do think that splitting up the roster into halves is the right way to do it because you don't want to draft all the top people tonight and then on Raw, you're drafting all mid-carders. I think you have to do it that way if you're splitting up the draft over two nights. But again, and we've mentioned this ad nauseum, got to tell us who is available so that people aren't expecting somebody to get picked and then they're shocked that they don't.
Yeah, I was being disingenuous with what I said, but you could interpret that way very fact that it was Drew McIntyre, you know, who was coming up next for that very reason. It's like, oh yeah, we probably would have picked up Becky and Bobby Lashley and a bunch of other people before Drew. That was kind of like there's opening for that kind of interpretation.
To defend things a little bit too, not that you're being seriously critical, but I think Drew was picked at a smart spot. You know, I mean, it was Roman and Big E, the two current men's singles champions, and then Charlotte and Bianca, which makes sense with the assumption Becky wasn't eligible. And then it was Drew, you know, I mean, Drew was the, other than Charlotte, the top non-champion. Oh no, Belair. I'm sorry. Belair was the top non-champion picked. And then it was Drew, you know, with the next pick. So I thought they handled it well, you know, in terms of following something that seems to make sense and you know, match the perception that fans have.
And since you brought up Belair, since we have 3 weeks about 3 weeks between now and when the draft becomes official, I wouldn't be surprised if there's more title changes. So that the belts go with the right brand. With Charlotte attacking everybody, I wouldn't be surprised in order to basically build towards the three-way at Crown Jewel if they have a three-way for the Raw's women title that either Sasha or Belair wins and take it to Raw.
It is when we sit here and say they're just going to trade belts. I mean, there are, you know, we got weeks to go. Same thing with the North American title. There's a lot of stories they can tell in the next few weeks.
Over the Seth Rollins thing, because a couple things came to mind on this. I did love McAfee bringing up that Edge should call the police. He's the only voice of common sense on that WWE has. Although, personally, I'd probably call Arn Anderson first.
Nicely played.
I do also hate to bring this up because they might hear me and bring this back, but do you remember when they were doing those promos where the wrestlers were either holding their phone or a camera themselves? Why didn't Seth – they just shoot that invasion like that? I mean, you know, it would have made more sense than actually having a camera guy aiding and abetting.
I was glad we got a little Cribs-like tour of Edge's home.
I think
home,
the quality
would have
been
poor. Yeah, I cause in part, Javier, serious answer to your thing is all Seth had to do is just yell at the camera guy, paid you good money to film me, get my good side. You know, there's just so many opportunities for him to just, you know, jump in and say something. So, like, it just wasn't that hard. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not that hard to explain it, and WWE doesn't, you know. But they don't think that stuff matters, and it may or may not, but it would make me happier and a lot of people happier if they seem to pay more attention to it.
And I also think that maybe the Daniel and Dave that he was calling was Daniel Bryan and Dave Bautista, maybe?
No.
David
no
Otunga?
David Otunga, yeah.
No point, copy.
okay. I don't know if I want to say this because if I bring it up, it's going to be might be kind of obvious, and it's probably going to ruin King of the Ring. Do you want me to bring it up?
Yeah, bring it up.
What are the odds that Mansoor wins the whole thing if the finals are in Saudi?
Oh, did they announce that the finals are in Saudi?
They did not announce
they haven't announced it, but
oh, okay.
Yeah, it's heavily implied.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And if it is,
I think
Mansoor will get his own special match somewhere else on the card.
Yeah, I don't think that's a spoiler, but I mean, I'm not like super against it in the sense that, you know, you can just imagine Ali just being like, oh my God, you're insufferable since you became the king, and you know, I don't know. I mean, you can play that up as a sort of a mid card thing. I dread a top guy winning it. And, you know, like although Drew could become a major babyface if he wins the tournament, if he's in it and wins it, and then he says, "Thanks for this crown and cape, but this is ridiculous. I'm not going to wear this. I'm proud I won a tournament, but please keep your crown, keep your cape."
Oh, I hate that you brought that up because he has the sword too.
Yes, yeah, but I'm advocating for him to reject the crown, not embrace it,
and keep the sword.
Yeah, but I'm yeah, he just. But yeah, man. Let's move on. Particularly since I'm going to skip ahead because the last thing I was to say. Particularly since, you know, over on the so far, this is some of like observations I made at WWE recently. So you have what feels like a 20s, 30s vibe for Happy and Madcap. You have Shane Thorne dressing up as Crocodile Dundee. The mafioso guy Tony D'Angelo over on NXT. Names like Bron Breakker, Doudrop, you have and names for other wrestlers that look like someone gave up and just slammed their head against the keyboard. I don't know, but I think one company is heading in the right direction and one might not be.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to bit players, it's not that big of a deal. Like, Shane Thorne wasn't even on TV, and he himself said, like, this Crocodile Hunter thing is his idea, probably to try to get on TV because he saw what happened with Nikki Cross when she came up with, you know, a gimmick, and she ended up being Raw Women's Champion, albeit for a short period of time, but obviously that ended up working out for her. You know, Tony D'Angelo looks like he's going to be a mid-card guy in NXT. Like, I don't have a problem if you're just trying stuff with people who are mid- or low-card people. It's when you do it with the upper-tier people that it's an issue. And they're not doing anything weird like that with Roman Reigns or, I mean, they kind of do it with Drew McIntyre from time to time with having the sword and that kind of stuff. So, but, you know, I never have had a problem with trying out gimmicks with people who are either not on the show or barely on the show because if you hit on it, and you find something good, then, you know, then you have another star potentially. So I've never had a problem with trying out gimmicks in that respect.
TJ Hopper, Javier.
TL.
That's TL.
Yeah.
TL. TL. TL.
Yeah,
TJ Hooker.
It's just
TL
that these
Hopper,
are kind of feeling these are kind of feeling old school, is what I'm saying. It feels like we're heading, you know, backwards in time, like with every passing year. You know, and you know, I'm all for like a fun gimmick, you know, or something out there, like, you know, the Fiend and stuff like that. But yeah, it seems to be a lot all at once. So,
it is. It is. Yeah.
I do want to shout out I definitely want to shout out the guy that had the localized Ranma 1/2 RPG sign. That was so random. I nearly peed myself laughing. I think like maybe very small amount of people got that reference. So, I was wondering, you know, yeah, that was something special. So I want to give
you
a shout out
to that. Did you notice, Mike?
What was the sign? I saw a weird sign and I was trying to figure out what it was.
Localized Ranma 1/2 RPG.
That's over my head.
It's
only know about
role
wrestling and sports.
Yeah, it's a role-playing game the Super Famicom.
Oh, okay.
It's a role-playing game for the Super Famicom back in 93 that never made it to the U.S.
Wow.
Based on a Japanese anime it's kind of crazy.
Did Omega 10 tonight?
Seriously, that is exactly the kind of sign that Kenny Omega would have at ringside.
Totally.
So.
Yes.
Overall I thought the show was okay. I kind of wish they had I don't want the call-in thing that they did, you know, on the previous draft, but I kind of wish they had like gossied it up a little bit more. We had done a little bit more.
I can see that. I mean, I'm fine with the strip down. Let's just get to the news. Let's explain it verbally. You know, network execs, WWE execs, all involved. They rotated picks. I mean, they explained it well. After what they did a couple years ago, I'm leery of them doing more. Do you have a specific idea of what you would have done differently?
Not really. I mean, something akin to the thing that they did last year, except not as stupid. You know. I don't know, something along those lines. It kind of felt like it was just put into the what would have been a regular show, as opposed to maybe a little bit more pomp and circumstance or something along those lines. I cannot believe I'm saying this, but maybe bring in like Corey Graves or somebody else, Corey Graves, period, over, so he can also talk about that since, you know, Raw's involved.
They could have had. Yeah, they could have had a panel discussion like they do on pay-per-views. Just, you know, cut to them for reactions to the picks. You know, put Jimmy Smith up there, so give me some material to work with.
I think that would have been a good idea. Another thing I would do, and it's hard because you're working with a two-hour show, so you have to – you can't dwell too much, but I would make it like the NFL draft. Again, like, people love the NFL draft, and I think they underestimate that fact. Have Vince announce the picks. He's your Roger Goodell. Have everybody who gets picked come up to the podium and – you know, maybe interact with Vince, cut a very quick promo about being on Raw or being on SmackDown. And I feel like you're engaged a lot more if you're doing something like that. We don't get that. You just say the names and maybe you'll hear from one of the people in the back for a second and that's about it. I think that you can make it feel a lot bigger if you treat it like like an actual draft, and they don't really do that.
Yeah.
And last thing I had, I think it was Sean who brought up, who might else be called up from NXT. I was thinking, since it looks like he's moving to the U.S., do you think Walter gets picked up by one of the brands?
I mean, if he moves to the U.S., it just seems like, yeah, let's get to it. Mm-hmm. Let's push him. Let's, you know, a heel against Big E or, you know what, I mean, just go. They need new stars, and I think that they need to push some people who have some cachet with AEW-type fans, and I think Walter does. You know, if people listen to Alan Farrell's shows, they're going to be all for this.
Yeah, I think that there's, like, there's one top guy missing on Raw, And I think if you bring, you know, Walter in, you know, on that level, I think that, he'd be a
yeah.
I think, you know, him and Priest matching up, and or him and Lashley, if Lashley stays, you know, I think that's probably because I was trying to figure out what it felt there was a hole based on who's left and who's coming over, because coming over from SmackDown, I could see Balor, which explained, you know, what they did to the Demon this weekend, Balor and Cesaro maybe, but not or Kevin Owens, but you know, Kevin Owens kind of feels like he's got a 1 foot out the door anyway. Because I'm thinking Seth Rollins is going to end up staying with Becky on SmackDown, but you know, so I'm thinking, you know, there was a hole missing on Raw, and I'm like, well, you know what? I just realized, you know, Walter kind of fits that the shape of that hole. So that'd be awesome. I mean, you know, that might actually make, you know, me
what do you think of that?
Continue watching Raw.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Mike?
I would love to see it again. You know, I, the question with him always has been if he would be willing to make the move to the United States. And if he does, then I think it would be a great fit. You know, obviously he got a lot of buzz for that match against Dragunov. I think people would embrace him on the main roster, embrace him as a big time heel. And the beauty with him is you can put him against anybody. You can put him against another big guy like a Brock Lesnar, you know, like a Drew McIntyre or Roman Reigns or whatever. But you could also put him against a smaller guy that can work a faster pace, like a Dragunov, like a Pete Dunne, who he wrestled before, or Tyler Bate. And it just works. So I think that he's very utilitarian in how you can use him, and he's a great heel. You know, they could do, you know, Vince loves a big foreign heel. So I could see him loving him some Walter. And if you call up the rest of Imperium with them too, I think that's another really good stable that you can have. So I would be all for it. I don't know that it's going to happen, but if it's a possibility, I think WWE would be crazy not to jump on it.
All right, very good. Javier, any closing words?
No, just check out my ongoing coverage on the New Japan Pride podcast on the G1 tournament. I've been so far I've been able to stay up to date and ahead of the following shows. So I've been dropping a show right after one, you know, the same day or the day after each episode. So hopefully I'm back to work. So I don't know if I can be able to maintain that pace, but yeah, check it out. If you want my thoughts on that and, you know, the play-by-play, which will be the last year I do play-by-play. That's not my favorite thing. But, you know, it's a good experience because it's interesting.
Well, I mean, there's play-by-play
cool
and then there's, you know, here's key moments in the match. Here's a turning point. Here's a cool move. The you know, doing like actual play-by-play, I don't know.
I'm working through it, but it's just for me, it's like, because the cool experience about it is, you know, seeing like a move that normally I would gloss over while watching a match normally. And then like, oh, okay. So I see why they did that move to lead into something else or some things. Like one of the things I realized was Shingo Takagi, whenever he has his signature moves. And if anyone ever gets out of a signature move, he's going to hit that signature move on the match. He's going to go back at it and hit that move. So it like, you know, so it's cool to watch it from that level. It's just, it's not like, you know, I like doing it like all the, for every single match, but it's been fun. It has been a fun experience for, you know, for the, for this go around on the G1. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Javier. Good to hear from you. And yeah, check out his G1 coverage.
Good night, guys.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you. All right. That's Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP contributor, a part of our roundtable segment. Sorry, I didn't play music for you, Javier. I just forgot tonight. We usually, you know, signify you with a few notes of music. Mike, let's wrap up here and tell people a little bit more about your show that we referenced a couple times earlier in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Check out Ring Rust Radio. You can find us on Spreaker or anywhere you get your podcasts. Every Tuesday night show is pretty much always up by 8 p.m. Eastern time. And basically, as I mentioned, we've been doing it for about a decade. The three hosts feel like we have good chemistry. And we like to just, you know, talk about everything that's happening in the wrestling world, WWE, AEW, pretty much everything, all the latest rumors. And we like to put a fun and entertaining and oftentimes comedic spin on it. So sounds like your thing. Check us out. And also, I'm always writing articles on professional wrestling and pretty much any other sport under the sun at BleacherReport.com. So check that out as well.
Awesome. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our on-site correspondents. And thank you, Mike. We'll do this again, maybe in another 6 months or maybe sooner.
Hopefully sooner. Always love talking to you, Wade. Had a great time.
Great. Thanks a lot. Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.